Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Which current franchise is the most disrespected in sports? Is it the Miami Heat, who Jay has been sleeping on? Just disrespecting Jimmy Butler and Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra. How dare you, Jay?
I've been on him the whole time. What are you talking about?
Since day one of this preseason, I was saying, watch the Heat.
And that's the first thing that came out of my mouth. We didn't talk about LeBron James or the Lakers. We didn't talk about the Brooklyn Nets. I started right off with some angry comments towards the Miami Heat.
And meeting after meeting on this show, saying, we should be talking about the Heat. I got outvoted. What could I do? J.J. Redick. ESPN NBA analyst extraordinaire, Jay, was on a terrific show, This Just In. You want to finish that sentence or no?
No.
All right. Handsome host. On who should be the next coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Listen to this.
I think Mark Jackson deserves another shot. And I don't know if that's who they've targeted, who's number one on their list. There's tons of rumors about Doc Rivers and maybe leaving Philly and getting to the Lakers. But as of right now, for who's a real candidate, I like Mark.
He said Mark Jackson. For some reason, we cut it off at Mark. But he meant Mark Jackson. Wasn't Mark Kestisher, it was Mark Jackson, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, look, they are going to interview a lot of people. This comes down to who Jenny Buss and LeBron James and Phil Jackson think can unlock the Lakers while they also work on the personnel aspect of it. So this team lost a lot over the last couple of years, right? I got a chance to spend some time with Lionel Hollins down in Memphis when I was down there for an earlier series against Golden State. He's no longer on the staff. Jason Kidd is not a head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. It's been accounted for a multitude of times about how much LeBron James really respected Jason Kidd because of some of the offensive options he brought to the table, scheming-wise, that really helped them during their championship run. Ty Lue no longer. So there's a lot of pieces that are missing from the staff that I feel like they've addressed, but they need to unlock some certain things now that Frank Vogel's no longer there. I do think what Mark Jackson was able to create in Golden State with Steph and with Klay, putting them on the right trajectory. It's like, you see this a lot of times with companies. You'll see a CEO that is a founder/CEO that founded the company, right? That took the company to incredible heights, but couldn't get the company to the next level. Got them to a great level, but not the next level. And then they bring on a CEO, and he's more in the former CEO is more of in a chairman role, and that's when the company, boom, right? Like Under Armour happened with Kevin Plank to a degree. So I kind of look at that with Golden State with Steve Kerr, right? He comes on board after Mark Jackson, boom, finds it. I kind of feel like this is that learning sweet spot for Mark Jackson of his career, what he learned from Golden State, now to translate that to the Los Angeles Lakers.
No one does a job for a long time and doesn't change the way they do the job. You refine what you do. Of course, you learn. I originally thought, because Mark Jackson did a great job at getting Golden State to a certain level, but then it was like the fewest passes of any team in the NBA, so their offense was the slowest and not very efficient, et cetera, or didn't put up a lot of points. And they felt they had to hire someone else to unlock the offense, even though he had clearly built it up and built the confidence up and the chemistry. Remember, modern basketball didn't exist, or postmodern basketball, whatever you want to call it, until Steph Curry came in the league and Draymond Green, right? And Mark Jackson built that up, and Steve Kerr took it to the next level. So Mark Jackson gets hung with this, label. He gets boxed with this label of, he could develop you, but then you need... But there are lots of coaches like that in different. I think about Jason Kidd in the NBA and his first go-round with Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how good he is now, because he learned, obviously, on the job, and he was good then. I think of Buck Showalter in baseball. Well, Buck can't get you over the top. Well, maybe he can if you give him a chance, right? I think of Emmanuel Stewart, my former broadcast partner on HBO Boxing, who was in the conversation for greatest trainer of all time, but in his first super fight, by his own admission, made certain mistakes when he was the corner man for Tommy Hearns. So even the greatest of all time go through a learning curve, right? Go through a learning period. And Mark Jackson, at this point, when you hear how many people play the game who want him as coach, it should tip you off, you know? I think he should have another shot.
There were a lot of things that happened that you hear stories from players you know, with Golden State about some of the things that were said. And honestly, I mean, look, a lot of people have gotten second chances for doing worse. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it's about
inappropriate language.
Can you win games? Can you make the stars around you better? Mm-hmm. And can you get people to buy into the culture that you establish? If Mark Jackson can do those things, and by the way, it's not like you have time to do that in L.A. You have to do that a year ago in L.A. because they need to kind of reset the culture and find out. I've been asking that question since the beginning of the season, Max. I'm like, who is this Los Angeles Laker team? Are they a post-up team? Are they a transition team? Are they a team that's going to play with LeBron James on the pinch post? Like, what are they? And we still had questions when it was all said and done.
I'm trying to think. As I said earlier, like, Michael Jordan became a very good passer in his career, especially as his career went on. But you never looked at him and thought he is touched in his passing. He is gifted beyond, like, a transcendent passing.
Like LeBron James. Yeah,
like LeBron James. Magic Johnson.
Luka.
Luka. Larry Bird. Mark Jackson was one of those guys. Yes. I'm not saying he's the same level of player as Jason Kidd, but Mark Jackson was one of those preternaturally gifted passers, right? Like LeBron. LeBron's never had a coach like that. Think about it. Has he ever had a coach who was that kind? Like Jason Kidd was that kind of guy. He was never the head coach of the Lakers.
The thing that I give Mark Jackson a lot of credit for, and it's something that Jason Kidd has always had, because I played a short stint with Jay Kidd. Jay Kidd was one of the – what, do you play with him, NBA 2K?
Yeah.
I can see that. I can see the relation. Jay Kidd was one of the most verbal dudes on the sideline now. I'm talking about during practice while he's on the sideline watching me. Jay, cover two, go under, go over, mirror to play. Like, flare. Like, he would be yelling schemes to me while on the sideline. And there's great footage of him in this last series where he's communicating as if he's on the damn floor about what Dallas is doing. Like, Dallas defensively has gotten a lot better throughout the course of these playoffs. Now, Mark Jackson has that same kind of vision. If him and LeBron James could be on the same page about that vision and how it's articulated, that's how I think you start building the right kind of championship culture.
Especially when you think about the most successful pairings in coach, whether it's a manager in baseball, head coach in football, you know, basketball, and star player, captain of the team type guy. Like, that guy as an extension of the coach is where you get dynasties.
But also, there needs to be healthy friction in confrontation. So now you and Key always joke
justify,
with me.
You're trying to justify.
No. But I'm going to help you understand it, though.
Coach K.
So you guys always joke around like Coach K and I got in a fight. But you know what that moment did for me? It made me realize this dude knows what the hell he's talking about. Mm. Wow. Like, he's challenging me to be that player in that moment, regardless of whether I had a bad game or not. I didn't see it in that moment. And I studied the game, right? Like, I learned the game. And I sometimes think for certain players, it takes you bringing somebody in who sees the game maybe as good or better than you, who is not afraid to tell you that they know they see the game as good or better than you, that you have to learn. Oh, and it works. So for LeBron James, think about LeBron James has had personalities. He can run over to a degree. Didn't have that with Eric Spoelstra because you had Pat Riley.
Yeah.
Right? That he had the respect at the end of the day.
You weren't just going to have your way.
Who's going to be a guy that draws a line in the sand with LeBron and says, look, I know you've done it this way, but this way that I'm telling you right now, that's going to help you win championships.
Ty Lue wasn't afraid to assert himself.
No, he was not.
But Ty Lue as a player, what I mean is, like, a perfect storm to me, theoretically, for LeBron James would be that kind of personality who also saw the game. Like, one of the things that Jason Kidd had, he sees the game at genius level, point guard genius level. LeBron is like that. There are lots of great point guards who are super smart. But even Rondo, who's a great passer and known as a basketball genius, didn't give me the same feeling watching him pass as I think, oh my God, super smart, right play, the whole thing. Oh, beautiful pass. But when, like, Jason Kidd passed, it just felt different to me. It felt. There's some guys like Magic, like Bird, like LeBron who are like that. And ideally, you'd have that kind of personality you described. And Mark Jackson actually did. His court vision and his passing was like that.
See, this is a game of many adjustments on the fly. Like, and that's what point guards do all day, every day. It's like during a show, like recognizing, oh, this guy's not paying attention. Or where's that product? Like, learning how to think quickly and pivot. And that's what you need to do in order to be successful, because you have to see two or three plays ahead off what the defense is giving you.
So there's that. And then, of course, Mark Jackson has had to wait a long time for a second opportunity. Now, that's probably two things conspiring to make that happen. One is he didn't get them over the hump. But when Steve Kerr came along, they went from, actually, this offense is slow, it's not scoring enough, to, oh my God, it's the greatest offense ever. So the jump made Mark Jackson look bad, right? And then secondly, there was a lot of reporting about paranoia and a kind of insistence upon the way, like certain philosophies of life that you are kind of, including religious beliefs that you're being kind of very upfront about in the locker room, and where others may not, you know, on the team may not feel exactly the same way, but it's the head coach, right? And so those two things, I think, conspired. Oh, culture went bad after a time, too paranoid, too. And also, oh, look how much better it was with Steve Kerr. But again, you can learn about how to taper back certain things that didn't work as well. And I would say, in turn, like, Steve Kerr used what Mark Jackson built up in Steph and Dre to invent the modern NBA. What? Well, now it's existed. Mark Jackson has also seen all that and knows all that.
Well, Max,
now,
here's a different challenge it's going to be for Mark Jackson, who had issues with ownership and leadership with the Golden State Warriors, right? If you decide to go into the Lakers situation, it is chaos. It feels like it's chaos between what you have with Jeannie, even though she came out with the op-ed, and she, to me, she drew a line in the sand that says, this is not about Linda or Kurt Rambis, or as Alan Hahn refers to him, Rambi. This is not about LeBron James or Rich Paul, Rob Pelinka, Phil Jackson. At the end of the day, it's about me having accountability and ownership. I appreciate that. Now, it's one thing to say that, whether that's actually practiced behavior that hits the ground running by the time Mark Jackson takes his job, if he does, that's going to be the question. How he manages that is a huge added effect on top of how he's coaching the game, right? Because do you get personnel decisions? Do you get say in personnel and who the team drafts, what moves they make? Like, do you feel like you're in unison with Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss? Like, how many cooks are in the kitchen? So there's a lot of things for Mark Jackson to address if that's the job that they decide to give him or he decides to take.
Keyshawn, Jay Will and Max is presented by Progressive Insurance. Let's get back to game one of the Eastern Conference Finals.
The kitchen sink is coming to Jason Tatum. Jimmy Butler has gone against LeBron for a lot of years. He went against Kobe. He's gone against KD. He knows what it takes to stay in front of the top-tier guys in the league, and it's a challenge that he is very much looking forward
to. I look for Bam Adebayo to be as electric as he was in the bubble. He's going to have to be that consistent second guy that Jimmy can depend on. It's going to have to be Jaylen Brown mixing it up inside and out, attacking the basket and hitting his jump shot.
All right, who better to ask about for their thoughts on the Eastern Conference Finals than the guy who's consistently underestimated the chances of a team that got all the way to the finals.
Always setting it up that way.
2 years ago.
I don't like it. Yates, where's the lies, lies,
Jay
lies?
Jay Will.
Lies, lies,
thank
lies,
you.
And more lies.
Every time he does it, Yates, make sure the people know the real truth.
Hey, Yates, watch
okay.
this. I don't need to debate with Jay because he can debate with himself. Jay, have you been underestimating the Heat's chances? Have you been disrespecting them?
Underestimating is different than disrespecting.
Well, which one is it?
Underestimating, yes.
Okay.
Disrespecting.
See how he just switched real quick?
Let's be honest. The disrespect hasn't
been... I don't
been,
need you to jump in this conversation.
The disrespect has not been towards the Miami Heat. It's been just towards Jimmy Butler. He said Jimmy Butler's not a one on a championship team, and he is going to be proven wrong round after round.
Oh, he might dunk on you, Jay.
So, but this is the thing, though. You can't just correlate the disrespect to one player because the whole team looks at it that way. The franchise looks at it that way. When I say I don't think Jimmy Butler could be the best player on a championship team, they are a championship team. So I'm saying that I don't think they're going to win a championship, pretty much. Now, look, I think Jimmy Butler can. Do I have them winning the championship? No, I do not.
Let me tell you,
I have the Boston Celtics winning the championship.
Hey, Monica. Monica McNutt is with us now.
Hey,
what
Mon,
do you think about
up,
all this? ESPN basketball analyst, former Georgetown guard, part of ESPN radio coverage of the Eastern Conference Finals. Game one tonight, of course, begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN radio. Monica, what do you think about all this disrespect that Jay is giving Jimmy Butler?
Oh, my God.
But Jay, did you wake up and choose violence like some other folks on our network?
I am not coming from that energy space from yesterday. No, I am not, Monica.
Well, okay, what's your argument, Jay? That he just don't have enough around him?
No. See, this is what Max does. He convolutes a conversation. I started off today and yesterday on our call. I just said, it feels like this organization from top down, from Pat Riley, the championships he's won as a Hall of Fame coach and a Hall of Fame executive. Espo, people always look over him because it's like, oh, it's easy to win a championship with LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh. I'm like, actually, it's not. it's hard as hell to manage those type of personalities. And then championship pedigree from Kyle Lowry to PJ Tucker to Jimmy Butler and the fact that he's gotten them there, it feels like they are the most disrespected team in all of sport right now. That was my point.
Okay. I agree.
Okay.
Here's where I am, y'all. If you wanted to tell me that your concerns around Miami are that they had an easiest path to this point, and can Jimmy Butler continue to average 28.7, I understand that. Jay, I don't know that people get into the weeds of pedigree or even how great Spoelstra is in this part of the season, right? Like, I think he and Steve Kerr have the same record in conference finals in terms of their success. So I hear you on that. I really think Jimmy Butler is on the cusp of doing something special. My concern in this matchup, though, is I do think the Celtics have a little bit more depth in terms of offensive weapons.
I agree with you on that, but it's interesting, Monica, just with your initial take, right? And I've been victim to it as well, where we end up talking about what Miami doesn't have, or, well, look at who Miami had to go through. And it's interesting. Why isn't the conversation around – because, you know, having legs at this time of the season is so important, Monica, right? So why isn't the conversation like, well, yeah, Miami went through Atlanta and they went through Philadelphia, but, man, if anything, like, that saved them some legs for this series, whereas Boston has gone through Kevin Durant and Kyrie and Giannis, that's like a freight train. Like, will they have their legs for this series? We almost look at it like, well, that helped Boston, but it hurts Miami, instead of saying, well, that helps Miami and hurts Boston.
Yeah, I mean, and it's totally your preference. I'm inclined to agree with you, because poor little Grant Williams might as well be black and blue after that's what happened to light skin after banging with Giannis. I'm inclined to agree with you, especially because, to me, heat culture, whatever people feel that is, they're not a team that needs another squad to flip the switch, right? And so the idea of the Celtics maybe being battle-tested and grizzly at this point maybe applies if you think that. I mean, technically they are a younger group in age, but they are experienced at this point in the season as well. And so for the Heat, I really don't think it matters who's in front of them. That's just the nature of that organization.
Monica, do you think Jason Tatum has arrived as one of the greats in our game? Now, I don't say great for a lot of people. Maybe there's 7-8 greats in our game. Is he there yet?
I think he's very close. But remember, last year we were having this conversation about Giannis. He wasn't cemented until the deal was completely done. So, yes, Jason has given us some tremendous play so far in the playoffs. But if they come up short versus Miami, I think we end up waiting a little longer.
Monica, in an evenly matched series, or relatively evenly matched, even if you believe the Celtics are deeper or whatever else, to not have Marcus Smart in game one, can that flip the series, do you think? How important is he?
I don't know that game one will flip it, Max, but I think if he misses a significant amount of time in the series, so what's significant? You start getting 2-3 games, I do think that that's going to be problematic, because he is so much of the identity of the Celtics, which, since the turn of the calendar, has been them as a phenomenal defensive unit. And so I just, yeah, man, like, it's not even just the stats. It is the personality and the character that team takes when he's on the floor.
I want to circle back to Butler for a second in the Heat. It's my contention, Monica, that I think one of the reasons people aren't picking the Heat is because we have this in mind, and you mentioned depth and you're paying attention to detail, but most of us reduce it, probably because it's easier, right, to the story of a couple of players, especially the best player on a team. And because of the distance traveled for Jimmy Butler, the way his career started as a defensive stopper, etc., it feels like we don't believe he can be the best player on a championship team. And that's where, because we believe in Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, and we know they're deep, we know they play defense. Do you think Jimmy Butler can be the best player on a championship team?
I do. And I think in this, now, if he does it with this group and Bam Adebayo doesn't kind of come to play. I think when they met in the bubble, he was the leading scorer, I believe, in the series. If he does it with this group without somebody emerging in terms of significant help, it will be very, very impressive. But I think what's underrated about Jimmy's game is how he can do multiple things so well. Like, Eric Spoelstra has talked about him being their de facto point guard at point. Like, that's a big guard coming at you And then I think his defensive identity is a lot of who he is. And so he's a guy to me that will run through the tape. There's nothing that he's not willing to do in order to win. And his teammates adore him. And that matters to me. I mean, think back, y'all. Like, even now the conversation is whether or not James Harden can get back. I have not heard sort of the praise around James Harden as a teammate that I've heard around Jimmy Butler. And that kind of stuff matters, right? And then we just kind of look at the way that both of their careers have panned out. So I think Jimmy can be a one guy on a winning team. Absolutely.
Monica McNutt, ESPN basketball analyst, part of ESPN radio coverage of the Eastern Conference Finals. Game one tonight, of course, and coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern. Thank you, Monica.
All right, cuz.
Thanks, guys.
Enjoy that weather down there in Miami, though. Enjoy that.
You know, I'm trying to enjoy that day between games, Jay, you know.
Get on it, girl. I love it.
Let me tell you my choice for the most disrespected team in sports.
Who?
The New York Yankees. That's right.
What? Oh, my
God. No one picked them to win the World Series except me when the season started.
You're wasting your breath.
Are you beginning to believe that the great New York Yankees, the greatest team in the history of American team sports by far, is going to do it all this year?
What?
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Electric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Electric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Electric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Buster, what it is right now. Buster, hey. Hey.
So, Jay, the Yankees are on a roll, and a lot of it, like, people are focusing on, you know, Stanton and Judge, and they're hitting the ball. And Kiner Falefa, I told everyone, he might be a bigger deal than Donaldson in the offseason to play real good shortstop. And he's had some hiccups at short, but he's a very good defensive player. And the defense is better. Rizzo at first, and they have more left-handed power with Rizzo and Gallo, who've been struggling, but they can really pick it in the field, and they can hit from the left side. The Yankees have been missing that in recent years. They have guys who make contact, like LeMahieu, all that stuff, and they have an incredible bullpen. Everyone knows that. What's flying under the radar is the starting staff. Gerrit Cole is a stone-cold ace, and so was Severino before he got hurt, and he's rounding back into form. And then they come up with Nestor Cortez, a lefty, little 5'11" lefty journeyman who was excellent last year in 22 games, 14 starts. He had a 2.9 ERA, and he's been outstanding this season. Buster Olney, ESPN baseball insider, and then I hear about Nestor Cortez, Buster, that he had to get off social media because tweets from when he was 17 had surfaced, and it was unclear to me because it was called racist, but was he using inappropriate language in a way that is not meant to be racist, but is it kind of like youth culture language, or was he doing it in a way that suggests, you know, racist language?
Yeah, and I'm not... Look, I mean, he used in those tweets words that I don't think most people would use. You know, he was right yesterday to own it. I don't think there's any excuse for it. And it's good that he moved on. And I'm sure that, you know, as was described, and I'm not down in Baltimore, but as was described by reporters who cover the team, it was...
Buster, you're cutting out. We missed the last thing you said, as it was described by reporters who cover the team in Baltimore. What?
That it wasn't like they struggled to find him yesterday. He was waiting for reporters when the clubhouse doors opened because he knew he had to address this. He owned it. He talked about, you know, those tweets as being things that, you know, he feels like doesn't represent how he thinks now, you know, 10 years later.
Buster, I'm curious, how important do you deem Cortes to be to the Yankees' success so far this season?
Well, he's a big part of it. He's one, as Max said, the starting pitching has been excellent. When you're talking about Luis Severino, finally healthy, Jameson Taillon has been good, you know, backed by that bullpen. Nestor Cortes, and Max, I've thought a lot about why Nestor Cortes is emerging now, and I think it has a lot to do with the evolution of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, the guy who threw really hard, 96 to 98 miles per hour, that guy was the outlier. And then all of a sudden, everybody in baseball focused on, look, we need to throw as hard as we can. And all the pitchers coming up throw 98 to 100. And hitters began to adjust their training to catch up to velocity. Well, you know what? All of a sudden, you don't have as many guys who throw from different angles, who change speed,
100%.
Who move the ball consistently. And now, that guy, you know, like a Nestor Cortes is the outlier. I was talking about this last year with Rich Hill, the Red Sox pitcher who likes to, you know, drop down and throw from the side. He said they don't see that anymore. And so Nestor Cortes, not only is he terrific in terms of his command, but he's the outlier. He's the type of pitcher that guys don't see anymore.
Buster, I had this theory about Chin Ming Wong back in the day, the Yankees right-handed hard-throwing sinker baller who barely struck anyone out, and that was a recipe for a short career or not a lot of success. But the league had changed where everyone was a three true outcomes hitter, right? They struck out, walk, and hit home runs. And since he pitched to contact, he would reduce the Jim Tomies of the world to guys they weren't, right? Hitting ground balls in the infield. And so he had success. What works is not constant. It depends on the league around you. And I think that's really good analysis of Nestor Cortes. Meantime, Yankees do have the best record in baseball. Are they the best team you've seen this so far this season?
So far, yes. Because let's face it, in recent years, what's always been the biggest question about the Yankees? Can they stay healthy? Can Judge stay on the field? Can Stanton stay on the field? The answer so far is yes. Their bullpen is the best in baseball. You know, we've talked about the rotation. The lineup has been excellent. Judge clearly on a mission, you know, playing great, you know, doing well in his free agent year. Stanton has turned a corner. You know, you talk to teammates about Stanton and how, you know, he worked through all those years when he was getting booed at Yankee Stadium. And now, you know, they all talk about how he's grown as a player. Those guys are all rolling. You know, we'll see. At some point, like with all teams, they'll have to deal with injuries, and we'll see how aggressive they are in fixing holes before we get to the trade deadline.
The Angels, meantime, have had their best season in a long time. Mike Trout is doing his same old thing, right? Maybe the best player ever. I mean, if you're the best player every year at your age, or one of the two or three, and you're 30, at a certain point you go, hey, maybe the best player ever. Are they for real?
There's no doubt they're for real. It's the deepest team that Trout has played on as a big leaguer. You know, we've all wondered, you know, when can the Angels get back to the postseason to get Trout on the big stage? Well, this is the type of team you're going to have, where you have more depth. And some of that, like Reed Detmers, who threw the no-hitter last week, you know, someone who was drafted by Billy Epler before Epler was let go by the organization, 22-year-old, he stepped up. You know, the investments in the bullpen in the offseason, those have paid off. You know, Noah Syndergaard had a bad game last night, but before that, he was better. It's just a much deeper team. In the past, it's always felt like, you know, the Angels are very top-heavy. You had Trout, maybe two or three other guys who could be good players, not a lot of depth. This team, this year's team, much better in terms of that. And I expect that all year, the Astros and the Angels would be battling it out for the top of the American League West.
Buster, we got about a minute left. The MLB trade deadline is about 10 weeks away. I'm curious to hear from you, what team should we be looking at to make moves as we get closer?
The most interesting team, no question, the Boston Red Sox, because they've got off this terrible start. They're way behind, you know, the Yankees being the hottest team in baseball, and everybody with other teams is wondering, would they actually put the for sale sign out and trade Xander Bogaerts? Would they deal some of the pitchers they have, Nathan Eovaldi and others, and become a big source for other teams in terms of trade? They've done it before under this ownership. John Lester, for example, being traded. You know, Andrew Miller 1 year was being traded. And the expectation is if they don't turn around the next 2 months, yes, they will be open to taking offers for guys like Xander Bogaerts.
Buster, who are some of the biggest players that will be available at the deadline, which is coming up in about 10 weeks?
The name everybody's talking about and wondering is if he's going to be available. The guy to watch is Juan Soto of the Nationals. Look, he's 2.5 years from free agency, but here's the thing.
You can hit.
The Nationals have tried to sign him, okay, and they haven't been able to get a contract. And so the question among other teams is, look, is this the time to sell him? Because remember, the franchise is up for sale. Will the incoming owners go to the Lerner family and say, look, you guys need to be the ones to be the bad guys to make this trade? He's a Scott Boras client. He's not going to sign a long-term deal. So when is the best time for the Nationals to trade Juan Soto? Can you imagine the bidding war for him? He would be the best young player traded since Babe Ruth.
I mean, he's 23 now. He's been in the league 5 years. He has a lifetime on base of .428, and he's slugging almost .550 for his career, and he's 23 years old. That is Buster Olney, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, as always, Buster.
All right, Buster Bus.
Thanks, guys. Take
care.
Got
it, brother.
So game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. And the top seed. Are they getting disrespected? By Jay Will?
Oh, see,
after
like
Jay has this from O'Reilly.
I don't like these narratives. It will not happen on my watch.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
G-Shawn, Jay Will, and Max, the podcast.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Oh, Max, I've been getting a lot of stuff online today.
You look like you're dressed like Debo.
Well, they call me Weebo, which I'm Debo's little brother. But I kind of get the looks, but it's just another black guy with a bald head. And
similar. You got the lumberjack, the blue.
It's not
buttoned up to the collar,
it's
man.
It's an APC shirt. It's dope shirt.
But
it's a cool
still,
shirt.
You know what I'm saying. The Debo look.
It's my MVP, punk. That's all I'm trying to say. When you disrespect Stephen Curry, I'm going to say it's my MVP.
Really?
Since you try to chop
him
down.
Really? Because you don't have
any
finals MVPs.
I got to be like Debo with you. Like, yo, we're just going to keep Steph in my house. It'll be both of ours.
You know what? It was going to be his MVP. And LeBron came and snatched it right off his neck.
Can I ask you a real question?
Go ahead.
In that moment.
Yeah.
When you said, I got Iguodala.
Yeah.
There it was. Did you really believe
the
it?
The funny thing is everyone knows I'm right. Everyone knows I'm right.
What?
I didn't say get your own shot or he's a better shooter. I'm saying with the chips on the line.
See, this is
open
what happens
look.
To me. This is what happens to me.
Iguodala has
world.
Hit big shot after big shot. Steph has often missed when it mattered most.
This is me
we're not taking the
in
shot.
In my work career. When I come out and I say I don't think Jimmy Butler could be a number one guy.
Disrespecting Jimmy Butler.
I own it.
Mark
I own
the
it.
Tape.
No,
yeah.
I was wrong.
Well, I own the Tom Brady thing.
Well, you had to because he won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I don't have to with Steph, right? Why is that?
Oh my goodness.
Oh.
Yeah, how's Iggy's career right now as it relates to big shots? I'm just curious if you've
Have
you seen that same trajectory since you made that
If you
comment?
Had a good 3 seconds with a look at the basket, but they knew that the title was on the
Stephen
line.
I'm taking Curry, not
Iguodala. Here's the question
God.
I ask.
Stop.
Here's the question I ask. Like Peyton Manning, some athletes perform consistently under their normal standards when it matters most. People saw that with A-Rod for years in the playoffs with the Yankees. And now, if you're a great player, eventually you're going to come through, right? But generally, Peyton Manning was generally not as good as in the regular season. Then there are other guys who, no matter what their regular season standard is, they elevate in the playoffs. Michael Jordan, Mariano Rivera. Steph Curry is in the former category. He sets an all-time great regular season standard that diminishes greatly late in the playoffs. I mean, what am I lying?
Well, does the standard elevate for Andre Iguodala?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. When it matters most, Iguodala's clutch.
What shots has he made that are clutch?
Oh, I love asking. Kidding?
You say it like it's this blanket statement.
Jay,
I'm asking you for
any Yankees. Ask any Yankees fan who they would rather see in the clutch in their primes. Alex Rodriguez, bases loaded in the playoffs, or Luis Soho. They would take Soho. He wasn't nearly the player A-Rod is, but when it mattered, you trusted him more.
I can't even talk to you.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack your 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Keyshawn, J. Will. And Max.
Evan, has Jay disrespected the Heat?
All year.
Oh, my.
You were on this show saying that
first
Jimmy
off,
Butler.
First off, lower your tone when you talk to me. Don't you yell at me in public.
Mr. Jay Williams, you were on this show, sir, talking about how Jimmy Butler, Mr. Jimmy Butler, was not a number one and that the Heat could not win a championship.
I didn't say they couldn't
Jimmy
win.
Butler,
called
the best
him a scrub.
Player.
I didn't say they couldn't win.
Oh, no, you didn't?
Wait, let me ask you a question, Evan. Are you picking him to win the title?
Hell no!
Then shut your mouth!
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. You know what occurs to me about the whole Jimmy Butler thing, though?
Evan can do that voice. You think you can repeat that voice again, Evan?
What's he doing the voice?
Mr. Jimmy Butler and Mr. Jay Williams.
But, what is it, an 8-year-old kid calling into the show? What is happening?
You know what occurs to me about the Jimmy Butler thing?
You told me to speak to you
thing?
With more respect, so I'm speaking with more respect.
I'm trying to make a very profound point. Evan. No fun. I'm making a profound sports point.
First
yes,
time
I got
ever.
It. Max, hot takes. Here it comes. I'm ready.
So in boxing, this happens a lot. One dude is avoided, right?
Uh-huh.
So just out of righteousness, people stand up and say, yo, he deserves a title shot. He deserves it. So they talk, hey, the champ is ducking him. Then when it comes time to pick the fight, everyone picks the champ, right? Because they just are doing it as an exercise in righteousness, not because they really believe he can win. But you know what the problem is? Sometimes the fight gets made, and Vernon Forrest beats Shane Mosley and wins the title, right? It's not just an exercise. There's a reason you have to exercise the righteousness, because there's a chance that, in fact, the guy you don't think is going to win, he's earned it, he deserves his shot. That's Jimmy Butler. None of us really believe that he is the best player on a championship team. That's why when push comes to shove, we don't pick him to win the title. Now it's up to him. Go get it, Jimmy. Go get
it. It's not only that. It's the fact that
what a brilliant
at times.
Point. Interesting.
You know, look, deep. Are you patting yourself on the back?
Sometimes
after
if you don't blow
you
your
made,
own horn, there's no music.
Well, there's not going to be any music
Damn.
On this show.
What?
Only you. I love it. The soliloquies are next level.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm a hustler, baby.
That's it.
So the only thing I'm going to say that sometimes makes me, it's that, Max, in conjunction with, at times, dude, for as much as Miami clamps you up defensively, mm-hmm. they have these scoring droughts where you wonder, like, how long are those defensive clamps sustainable when you have pockets within games where it just seems like it's difficult for you to score?
Yeah.
And when you start facing higher level competition, like the Boston Celtics, that have Jason Tatum that can go off. They have Jaylen Brown that
it's
can go
like
off.
It's not like they don't have guys on the – like Duncan Robbins could shoot the lights
yeah,
out.
Yeah, if
but
he gets on the court, if he's not being targeted as a liability defensively, which
yeah.
you saw last
They don't
last
have
series.
It wrapped up. Like in Jaylen –
Tyler Hero hasn't been himself either now at the same level
in
he was
Jaylen Brown
season.
And Jason Tatum, you have two stars who are two-way players. It's all wrapped up in the same package. You don't have to take them off the floor. They can shoot. They can do everything. And the Heat have a lot of players who can do certain things very well, but then not other things well, so you can exploit them in certain ways.
I'm going back to my point that I made all day today. One of the things that you will not hear on any other show
mm-hmm.
is people talk about sometimes when you play
slandering Jimmy Butler.
Big-time competition,
you're the only one.
Your legs get heavy late in the playoffs, man.
Oh,
they get heavy. So we're talking about Jason Tatum being one of the best two-way players in the game. What happens when you play a lot of games against the KDs, against the Kyries, against the Giannises over time, you get to a certain point where you don't have those same legs anymore. Does that affect him on the offensive end? Does that take away from some of his firepower? Marcus Smart has an injury. How is that going to factor in? And I'm looking at the Miami Heat saying, yes, they've had defensive prowess against Trae Young and company. They made him look like a little kid, right? Yes, the next round, Joel Embiid not there. They made James Harden. They smothered him. I feel like their legs are fresh. That is a major advantage for the Heat that I guarantee you nobody is talking about right now.
They also don't have a player on that team. While they have two, like, to me, my favorite is a two-way wing. If you have two of those guys, I love your chances, and the Celtics have two of those guys. The question is how highly pitched is the talent and skill? Jason Tatum, very high, and Brown also high, and it may come down to just how high can Brown go, right? But they don't have, while Marcus Smart is a tremendous player, they don't have the primary ball handler guy who can get his own shot whenever he wants, shoot the lights out. Like, that is not a guy on the Celtics, and I wonder if that can be exploited in some way.
Well, Jason Tatum can get a shot whenever he wants.
He can, but he's not a primary ball handler.
Yeah, but I feel like at this point, like when I watch Ime Udoka, there are schemes. It's almost like there's not a – even though, you know, Draymond Green is a great assist player, their schemes are set up because there's so much action. They still get a lot of assist off their
You're not going to deny him the ball anyway, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And like, they make the right reads. Like, this is high – high-level basketball IQ that we're going to see between these two coaching strategies. Ime Udoka, who just coached with the Brooklyn Nets the year before, he knows how to attack big wings. He's done it with KD. He's done it with Giannis. He'll try to do it again with Jimmy Butler. And then you have Eric Spoelstra, who, by the way, is one of the all-time best at making the micro adjustments throughout the course of games. And the discipline is the word that Pat Bev had for Jimmy Butler. That's for the whole team, though. The discipline by a team, their ability to adjust and all be on the same page is also something that is extremely underrated about how good the Miami Heat are defensively.
You know, when you look at this matchup, another reason you might like the Celtics, and Udoka's been incredible as a young head coach, Spoelstra has a very good argument that he is the best head coach in basketball.
Yes.
And the difference between Spoelstra and Udoka is his experience. He is a very – Spoelstra is a very experienced head coach in the championship
I'll give you an
level.
Example of that. The play, I think it was in game five in which Boston lost, right? Literally, Giannis was on the ball. The play – you know that play where Marcus Smart got the ball blocked by Jrue Holiday?
Mm-hmm, of course.
The play was designed on the opposite end. Al Horford came for a down screen on Jason Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Ime Udoka accounted for the size and the length about where the ball was positioned on the sideline out of bounds for how long Giannis was. Because there was no way that ball was going to get across. It had to be pitched down to the short corner, right? Which perfectly set Marcus Smart to make the right read. But if you have experience in that moment, you're saying, okay, they're going to put Giannis on the ball to deter passing lanes. There's no way I can get a skip pass over Giannis to the opposite side of the court. I have to put Jason Tatum in that short corner so he can make that read. Those are the slight, subtle adjustments. Now, they still won a series, but you think about it, that series could have been flipped the other way.
Yeah, and if they had Chris Middleton, I'd say probably right? would have.
So those are the kind of things where micro adjustments and having the calm, the poise, to be like, yo, I know exactly
By
what
the way,
to do in these moments.
Listen, these things are probabilistic, right? Although I do think that the NBA, one of the reasons it's so fun to watch, on the one hand, like the NFL playoffs seem less predictable, and that adds to the excitement of March Madness, one and done. The NBA... usually the best team wins, and we think of it as deterministic. If you have equally matched teams, the team with the best player wins the whole thing. It's not exactly that way, but a lot of times it feels like it's that way. And of course, there's a probabilistic nature to it, too. You get a little lucky with injury, whatever. The ball bounces in. It doesn't bounce in. I'm not saying that Udoka can't win or even out-coach Spoelstra. It's possible. After all, there's always a time where a first-year head coach or a coach who had not been to the finals before wins a championship, and sometimes that occurs against a coach who has won finals before. So it's possible, but when we're handicapping the series, we're saying, but what's more likely? And I think my guess would be in those moments, Spoelstra is a little better prepared because of the experience.
What, Evan, what's the spread for tonight? You know what the line is? I think Miami wins tonight. I think Miami gets the first one at home. I really do. I think especially
Marcus Smart.
The quick turnaround, too. Like,
Celtics Miami played a 7-game series. Heat played a 6-game series. Celtics are on the road. Heat are at home. Celtics are playing down Marcus Smart, although the Heat are playing with Kyle Lowry, you know, hurt. So, but it does seem like the Heat have the advantage.
Point favorite.
Which puts pressure on them to win, by the way.
I will take the Heat to cover tonight.
Now, that does put pressure on them. You don't want to lose this game if the Celtics are down Marcus Smart.
There's pressure on everybody, man.
I'm saying special pressure.
Special pressure.
Keyshawn J. Willimax, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, back tomorrow, 6 a.m. Eastern.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn J. Willimax, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.